From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Hope everyone's enjoying this almost summer here in Chicago. The weather is tantalizingly nice in the 80s and 90s this week. But we've had cold weather last week. We'll have cold weather next week. But lest this turns into a weather program, we'll switch to miracle news. This is an exciting episode ahead for you today. Two of my favorite guests that I've interviewed in the past, one of them is Adam Bly. He is the Paratus of Religious Demonology for the Diocese of Pittsburgh. And he actually wrote the introduction to a book called The World of Marian Apparitions by Vicente Lajewski. This is a book by a Polish author that's come to us here in the United States, and I absolutely love this book. It is perhaps the greatest book ever written, at least a visual compilation of Marian apparitions of all the books I own. I own many, many, many books on Marian apparitions. I've got the library to prove it, and this perhaps is the greatest of all those books. So we're excited today to talk to Adam Bly, who wrote that introduction to the book and who can give us some insight on the world of Marian apparitions. And I'm also excited to speak to Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, the vice postulator for the canonization cause of Blessed Jacinta and Francisco, who became saints on May 13th, 2017. And she is currently the vice postulator for the cause of Sister Lucia of Fatima. And of course, that big anniversary in 2017, we had the canonization of the two youngest shepherd children. But what about the older cousin, Sister Lucia of Fatima? Of course, she lived many more years and had many writings and many other correspondences over the years. So there's much more information and a whole lifetime of virtue to examine. So a little bit of a trickier canonization cause, to be sure. But we're so excited because Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho is here in the United States. So we've got an interview with her about her book, Inside the Light, from Tan Book. So I'm so excited to be talking with Sister Angela later in the program. And for those people who have been tuning into the Explore series on EWTN, and of course that's Explore with the Miracle Hunter, and it's my travel show where I travel all around the world and go to these most famous places of miracles. And perhaps my favorite Marian shrine in the entire world is that of Our Lady of Guadalupe, La Morenita, as she's known in Mexico. And so this is the most visited Marian shrine in the entire world. And I go there to investigate how this mysterious image was emblazoned on the tilma of St. Juan Diego, and it's inspired so many millions of believers. 20 million people per year visit that shrine. And so that's scheduled for today, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And next week, on May 21st, we've got a new episode of Explore with the Miracle Hunter, the Holy House of Loreto. And so for people who don't know, this is pretty fascinating that the Holy House of Loreto is, according to pious tradition, where the Virgin Mary is believed to have lived and received the Annunciation. But how did it get from Nazareth to its current home in Italy? And is this truly just a pious legend? Is there some archaeology that suggests that this house is in fact from the Holy Land? And if it is from the Holy Land, how did it get to Italy? So we go through that entire investigation next week, May 21st, at 6 p.m. Eastern Time of Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Loreto. And if you're looking for something interesting to read, I've got a brand new book that's out. It's called Science and the Miraculous, How the Church Investigates the Supernatural. It's from Tan Books. I go into all the different avenues that the Catholic Church goes through to investigate. We're talking about healing miracles like those at Lourdes, or the canonization of saints, or Marian apparitions, or Eucharistic miracles, or weeping statues, or stigmata, or incorruptibles. I've got a chapter dedicated to each of those, and I go into the ways that the Church uses science to rule out those cases that aren't quite miraculous. And also, does science actually prove that miracles, in fact, do happen? So this is my new book, Science and the Miraculous. It's from Tan Books, but you can get it at EWTNRC.com. Later in the show, we'll be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project. For today's date, we've got Our Lady of the Pine from Magtagna in Italy in the year 1729. And we'll be looking at the might-be saint of the day, Blessed Giles of Santarém in Portugal, 1185 to 1265. His feast day is today, May 14th. I've been there to Santarém in Portugal. I'll be telling you all about his amazing life. And the question of the week: are the saints that are on display as incorruptibles around the world all really incorrupt? I'll do my best to answer that difficult question. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we look at the miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And for people who are interested in keeping up to date with the latest and greatest, you can connect to the Facebook feed of The Miracle Hunter. If you go there each and every day, we've got posts about miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And so we have a story of something that relates to a miracle today. So the Vatican is intervening in a conflict between the Archbishop of Salta and the Discalced Carmelites there. So the Congregation for Religious Life and Societies of Apostolic Life at the Vatican is mediating between a conflict between the Archbishop of Salta, Monsignor Mario Antonio Carneiro, and the Discalced Carmelite nuns of Salta in charge of the Monastery of San Bernardo. So there is various instructions that have been delivered from the Vatican on the administrative management of the monastery and the obedience of the Carmelite congregation to the local bishop, and what is the stance that they should have regarding an alleged Marian apparition, popularly known as the Virgen del Cerro. And the nuns would be promoting without the endorsement of their local bishop. So the statement specifies that the apostolic assistant for the monastery after April 26th will be appointed by Rome, and they announced the completion of the apostolic visitation carried out by Monsignor Martin Elizalde, the Bishop Emeritus of Santo Domingo and Rivda. And so that is the San Bernardo convent that they're looking at. And so, again, this is they're looking into various issues at work, of course, but one of the big things that I'm mentioning here today relates to the aforementioned work relating to the alleged apparitions of the Virgin Mary and Jesus Christ to the Salta parishioner Maria Olivia Gagliano de Obeid since 1990 and continues even till today. So this is one of the longer-running Marian apparitions that's happening, allegedly, around the world. And so the Dicastery clarified that, quote, it awaits the bishop of the place of through competent congregation of the Apostolic See to discern the veracity and authorized worship practices in this context, end quote. And the community of the Sisters of Salta is obliged to strictly observe the rules of this law in this regard, including the strict observance of the monastic closure, the text said. So this is an interesting thing. So we have a case of this Maria Olivia Gagliano de Obeid. She lives on her own premises and allocates some space to the pilgrims close to her in this context, and it gives some sort of recognition to this apparition as being authentic without the local bishop having actually investigated and giving an official statement. So the Vatican is intervening in this conflict. And if I have to be honest, this is very rare. So normally the local bishop will handle these things on the local level. And he is the first and foremost authority on Marian apparition claims. And whatever he says goes, except in the rare cases where the Vatican, after the bishop's conference, will intervene. And this is one of these such cases where the Vatican is stepping in to make sense of this conflict regarding these alleged apparitions there in Salta. So that's the miracle news for today. To keep up to date with more miracle news happening all the world around the world, you can connect to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter. And each and every day, we post the miracle items happening all around the world. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that writes in with the right answer. And each week we send this image of the faces of Mary to those people who get the right answer, or to the one with the fastest correct answer. And so last week we talked with David Carollo about Fatima, the gold standard of Marian apparitions, as I like to say, in which children were present for the apparitions of the Angel of Portugal in 1916, which preceded the visions of the Virgin Mary And the answer is an easy one. It's Lucia, Jacinta, and Francisco. All three were there to witness the visions of the Angel of Portugal, which preceded the visions of Our Lady of Fatima. So this week, we have the question. Yesterday was the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima, another Fatima question. What other three Marian apparitions are also found on the general Roman calendar? Again, yesterday was the big feast day, Our Lady of Fatima, May 13th. What three other Marian apparitions are also found on the general Roman calendar? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, and maybe we'll be answering your question and giving you the answers next week. All right, we'll need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking to Adam Bly about the fascinating world of Marian apparitions. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I've written about this in the past, and it's pretty interesting because I have quite a library full of books. Every modern book I've ever written about the Virgin Mary and her apparitions. And there was a book that came out last year that really caught my attention from Sophia Institute Press, and it's called The World of Marian Apparitions from Vicente Lazuski. And this, in my opinion, is perhaps the greatest book, at least visual compilation, of modern Marian apparitions that I've ever come across. I can't recommend this book anymore. It's absolutely amazing. And one of the aspects of the book is so interesting is that it provides a great overview of Marian apparitions that have happened throughout modern history, perhaps starting as early as Fatima and beyond. And most books only cover those things that relate to the very highly approved and investigated Marian apparitions. And this book covers them all, the full gamut of approved and condemned and others apparitions that have a chance of being authentic. Well, we're so excited today to be joined by Adam Bly, who wrote the introduction to this book. And he's the Paratus of Religious Demonology for the Diocese of Pittsburgh. And he's the author of a great book in his own right, and that's The Catholic Guide to Miracles. We welcome back to the program today, Adam Bly.
Oh, thank you, Michael. It's good to be here.
It's great to chat with you again. And this book that you wrote the introduction for is an absolute beauty. It comes to us from an author from Poland, Vicente Lazuski. And the book is an amazing compilation because it uses maps and graphics and photography from all these little-known Marian apparition sites all around the world. What was your reaction when you first got wind of this project and was invited to write the introduction for it, when you saw the vastness of apparitions that are enclosed in this book?
Yeah, it's the vastness, I think, that's important. So we all hear about the very, you know, popular and oft-talked about things, and then the rabbit holes of the conspiracy theories connected with them, and kind of can get distracted and drawn into them. But I think what's fascinating when we can step back and see the broader pattern of Marian apparitions and the things that are said and the way Mary interacts with people, I think that becomes like a fabric or a tapestry that can give us a broader kind of picture and understanding of what's going on, instead of drilling down into somebody's personal reactions and thoughts on a specific apparition and, you know, what they think or don't think. Here we're looking at what is the church study thoroughly, what's still under review, and then what's the overall tapestry or pattern. And I think that's a great contribution here.
Absolutely. And I think what's so interesting is that it does include some of these very famous examples of Marian apparitions that apparition experts and people who love Mary and miracle-minded Catholics are very well familiar with. But then there's a whole array of apparitions that are kind of on the lesser-known end. Perhaps they're still under investigation. And it really opens our eyes up to seeing the how Mary has interacted with our world in both approved and maybe future to be approved Marian apparitions. And there's a great map at the very beginning of the book that lays out all the Marian apparitions throughout modern times, and it's an impressive array. And so when you consider this book, what were some of the things that you learned, new apparitions perhaps, or different things historically related to the visions of Mary? What did you learn that was kind of surprising to you?
The thing that impressed me and that I really got out of this was actually learning the history of the people that Mary appeared to, the impact of the apparition on their lives, and then what happened to them later. And that, in a sense, gave me another side of it that I had never considered in hearing about Marian apparitions. Like, you might hear about Lucia and did she go on and she became a nun. And but this gives you this broader sense of how does this impact a person's life? You know, I think we would all imagine, when we consider a Marian apparition, what if that happened to me? What would I have done? Mm-hmm. How would that impact my life? You know, and wondered about that. And that was the biggest thing that impressed me here. You know, the general message is consistent, and that is turn back to my son. But also the impact on humanity is a personal one in addition to a broad one.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Adam Bly, author of the book, The Catholic Guide to Miracles, and contributor with an introduction to the world of Marian apparitions, which is perhaps the greatest book ever written on Marian apparitions, at least from a visual point of view. And one of the things that's very interesting about this book is that it shows the whole gamut or breadth of Marian apparitions. And we're talking about from Fatima to today, as the subtitle of the book might say. But we're dealing with these very highly approved apparitions like Fatima. And then we're dealing with some that are in process. And there are even some that have been condemned by the church, like the 1948 apparitions in Lipa in the Philippines, a site that I've been to myself. And so, in your opinion, why is it important to show this whole gamut of in the approval process of both approved, condemned, and ongoing in the same book?
Well, I think it's really valuable for the reader to see that whole process and also to see that there are a number that are condemned and found to be in error and to be false in some way. You know, the church is cautious in approving Marian apparitions and cautious in terms of endorsing them for the faithful to maybe benefit from. Of course, we know these are all private revelations. The church never says you must believe what's said or happens at these, but the church is also very protective of endorsing any of them. And that caution, that prudence, is really valuable for people to understand and to appreciate that the church isn't just casually saying, oh, great, that sounds good, and let's approve it. And also just the fact that it's the local bishop that actually approves them. It's not the Pope or the Holy See, though they may endorse them indirectly later. You know, there's details in this process that most people aren't aware of.
That's right. I often like to joke that the church's approval process is clear as mud. It harkens back to a 1978 document, The Norms of the Congregation for Proceeding and Judging Alleged Private Revelations, and that's what the church still uses even today. That document has not been updated, but that's what the local bishop will use when assessing a Marian apparition as potentially being authentic. And when we have the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima coming right up around the corner, and when we look at this book, there's a heavy emphasis on Fatima. The book spans the time of Fatima to the modern day. But there are also many references to Fatima, whether it's the life of Sister Lucia or her subsequent visions after those initial visions in 1917. Talk a little bit about the way that the author weaves Fatima throughout this book.
Well, the Fatima message, you know, included instructions and it included kind of a why in the road for humanity. And a lot of Marian apparitions, as you know, Michael, they come at critical decision points in human history, and it can be heaven's way of kind of guiding us or prompting us to really wake up and look carefully and make a good choice. And Fatima was one of those times. You know, it was a critical moment, you know, towards the end of World War One, and talking about World War Two, which was kind of inconceivable that this would happen again. And yet it did, and the exact sign in the sky that the sky would turn blood red on the eve of it. And that's exactly what happened in Europe. But the ongoing thing is Fatima not only pointed to World War II, but it pointed, you know, to the general kind of critical decision for humanity to turn to her son in obedience or not, and whether the father would eventually bring judgment and it wouldn't be the endless mercy. And so that caution gets echoed in other Marian apparitions in subsequent decades. So there's basically a continuous tapestry of ongoing input from heaven, whether we've successfully responded to the previous and what is going to be the future impact of our response or lack of response. And so there's a pattern of kind of prophetic or consoling or encouraging messages from Mary. It's not just isolated incidents.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Adam Bly, the author of The Catholic Guide to Miracles and the writer of the introduction for the book World of Marian Apparitions by Polish author Vincente Lazuski. And when we look at this book, every single person I show this book to absolutely falls in love with it. Like I say, it is the ultimate in a visual compilation of Marian apparitions, at least modern ones, especially considering those across the whole gamut of approved and condemned and in process. When we consider those apparitions in process being judged by the Church, do you foresee more apparitions to be approved in the future, or are they kind of stuck in this middle ground that are never going to be approved?
Well, I think, as you said, the document that's used to guide the bishop's decision hasn't changed. So I think others will be approved depending on what heaven does. I think humanity's response hopefully will be consistent with the Church's document. But we have to wait and see what heaven chooses to do. You know, the kind of very famous ongoing question about Medjugorje, mm-hmm. And kind of a passive approval of visiting, but not a statement saying that this is definitely valid. You know, it's been kind of a controversial situation, different bishops there having, in some cases, different views on it. Mm-hmm. So that one's a big one, whether that will finally be approved. And by the way, of course, the Church waits until something has completely run its course and finished so that it can be judged in totality. Mm-hmm. The Church doesn't want to make a judgment on an ongoing situation, because if the Church makes a judgment now and then it spins out of control, it can be seen as an endorsement of something that's heretical or in error.
That's right.
So you know, that's part of it. But basically, we have to wait on heaven. You know, it's up to, I think, the Church to judge properly and well, but it's up to heaven to decide whether we'll be given more real apparitions.
Very well put. We've been talking today with Adam Bly, the author of The Catholic Guide to Miracles and the writer of the introduction to the book The World of Marian Apparitions from Sophia Institute Press. I encourage everyone to pick this one up. This is the ultimate in books on or visual compilations related to Marian apparitions. And as we wrap up the interview today, Adam, what is your hope? You wrote a beautiful introduction to this book, and as I say, everybody who picks up this book has a very positive reaction when they're holding this beautiful hardcover, coffee table-like book in their hands. What is your hope for people who pick up this book and learn about it?
Well, my hope is conversion, that they go deeper into the times heaven speaks to us through Marian apparitions, but that, more importantly, that leads to conversion. That the overall message that Mary brings of turning to her son will really resonate for the person when they see that full tapestry across time, across many apparitions. And also, as you say, through the beauty of the book itself, just as a church is beautiful and inspires a response, I think this book will add that layer of beauty that will hopefully speak to their hearts.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Well, we're so grateful to you, Adam Bly, the Paratus of Religious Demonology in the Diocese of Pittsburgh and author of The Catholic Guide to Miracles, for talking to us today about this beautiful book from Sophie Institute Press, The World of Marian Apparitions. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Michael. God bless you.
God bless. That was Adam Bly. Check out this book, The World of Marian Apparitions. It's a beauty. Anyone who picks this one up is going to absolutely fall in love with Mary all over again. It's such a beautiful visual compilation. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting your questions. People have interesting ones related to those fascinating phenomena that's going on these days in the world. But I think that's interesting when we talk about the miracles that happened centuries ago. And I've been giving talks around the country every year. I give 20 talks or so traveling all around the United States. And I speak at local parishes, at conferences, at different other events. And so people who are interested in having me speak at your conference, you can go through my website, miraclehunter.com, and go through the speaking tab or the contact tab, and you can connect with me that way. I mention this because I really enjoy giving presentations about miracles, but my favorite part is always the question and answer section afterwards. People can ask me whatever they want about miracles and otherwise, and I do my best to answer them. So it's a great opportunity to try to stump the Miracle Hunter. But we have a good question today that I got recently, and I think it is pretty interesting, and I'll do my best to answer it. Dear Miracle Hunter, are all the saints that are on display around the world as incorruptibles really incorrupt? Thank you, David. Well, thanks, David, for your question. And it is a hard one because it's a real mix out there. So if you were to get my new book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Church Investigates the Supernatural, from Tan Books, it's available at ewtnrc.com, you'll see I have a chapter dedicated to the incorruptibles. And we do have several hundred saints throughout history. There are 10,000 saints that have been canonized by either popular acclaim or through the processes of the church. And of those 10,000, we have several hundred, perhaps, that are identified as incorruptible. And we have these cases that are near perfect preservation, like Saint Bernadette of Lourdes, for example. She is one of the most beautifully, miraculously preserved cases. In that book, Science and the Miraculous, I have the doctor's report published in the book who examined her when they first opened her tomb. But even before we get rolling with what are the authentic cases and what cases are not authentic, and there have been plenty of cases where there's been additional preservation applied by the church authorities to continue the look of that saint, of how they lived, is what is the definition of incorruptible anyway? We might say that incorrupt, according to some people, we might say it is a saint who's in a state of near perfect preservation for many, many centuries. And we even can look at Prospero Lambertini, who is the Italian cardinal born in the 1600s, who later went on to become Pope Benedict XIV. He actually wrote the rule book for incorruptibility. And he said that incorruption is not a miracle that should be used for canonization causes. It doesn't necessarily imply the person's with God in heaven. However, he does make some notable exceptions, like St. Andrew Bobola, who he says is a saint who's been in an unpreserved state for so many centuries that you've got to consider it a miracle. So it's a little bit confusing how the church looks at these things. And so we talk about some of these fascinating cases that have not been preserved, but then there are cases that have been preserved. But does that run contrary to the definition of incorruptible? So we might say that an incorruptible saint is one when the coffin is opened, is in a state of perfect preservation. It's not necessarily the preservation of a corpse throughout the centuries. And so the Catholic Church, through many efforts, has gone to protect the look of that saint so that faithful throughout the centuries could see how that saint lived and looked when we see those corpses that are perfectly preserved artificially. So it's a complicated issue. Again, in my book, Science and the Miraculous, I get into some of the famous cases, some of the famous cases that have been preserved artificially and have been passed off as perhaps miraculously preserved. So it's a complicated issue. But thank you so much, David, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or just go to my website, miraclehunter.com. Send me a message that way, and we'll be trying to answer your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. For today's date, we've got Our Lady of the Pine from Montagna in Italy in the year 1729. And the story goes that Domenica Targa, age 30, was busy watching her cattle, which started running in all directions, when she cried, "Mary, Jesus, help me." The Virgin Mary appeared with a white veil and promised her help in exchange for her making a pilgrimage on the Ascension to St. Anne in Montagna that had an image by Caravaggio. She went in. As she knelt in prayer, the crowned Blessed Virgin Mary appeared again in a golden robe with Jesus in her arms, asking that the local priest be told of the apparition and that a feast be established. In 1730, an ecclesiastical investigation began, which had a positive result. A sanctuary was built and consecrated in the year 1750. And that's Our Lady of the Pine from Montagna in Italy in the year 1729, celebrated on today's date, May 14th. For more information on this fascinating devotion, or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can check out the website 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book of the same name. You can go to the Facebook feed and join any of the 10,000 other followers who follow that page. Or you can download the free iOS app 365 Days with Mary. Let's take a look at sainthood news. We do this every week where we try to give you the latest and greatest updates on who's moving along the path to sainthood. And of course, people who listen to this show know that we talk about servants of God, venerables, blesseds, and then with a second miracle, they become a saint. So Pope Francis recently received an audience, Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect of the Vatican Congregation for the Causes of Saints. And he authorized him to promulgate a decree regarding Bishop Francesco Costantino Mazzieri, a member of the Friars Minor Conventual, originally from Abadia de Osimo, and he was a missionary. In 1930, he felt the call to evangelize far from Italy and was sent with six brothers of what is now Zambia in the district of Ndola, then northern Rhodesia, a British colony at that time. For 36 years, he gave witness to pioneering evangelization that helped the church grow despite the difficult and impervious conditions. He chose to reside in the rural areas of Santa Teresa, and his humility and together with his great charitable sensitivity, he worked heroically taking care of lepers. And he was loved by the people and died in 1983, always remembered for his personal holiness. And that is the future venerable Bishop Francesco Costantino Mazzieri, and he was recently declared venerable there by Pope Francis. Let's take a look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. We also do this every week where we look at the saint whose feast day lines up exactly to the day's date. And on the television show They Might Be Saints, which airs on Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, we look at Americans on the path to sainthood. And we talk about from miracle workers to martyrs to those ordinary people living extraordinary lives of heroic virtue. These are the people that make us wonder if someday they might be saints. And so for today's day, we've got Blessed Giles of Santarém in Portugal. And I've been there to Santarém myself. He was born in 1185 at Vallazela in Portugal, and he was the son of Rodrigo Pelayo Valardes, the governor of Coimbra, Portugal, and he was counselor to King Sancho I. Though his family encouraged him to enter the priesthood, and his royal connections provided him with several benefices and prebends, Giles had no interest. He studied medicine and necromancy, and one of his biographers claimed Giles made a blood sign pact with the devil for knowledge and skills, and he renounced it only when he had a special knight appeared to him and ordered a change to his life. Whether it was real or a metaphorical description, Giles did return to Christianity, and he studied theology in Paris, France. And he joined the Dominicans at Palencia in Spain, the Dominican provincial for Spain he became later in his life. And that is Blessed Giles of Santarém in Portugal from 1185 to 1265. A fascinating life. He died in 1265 in Santarém of natural causes, beatified on May 9th in 1748 by Pope Benedict XIV. That is Blessed Giles of Santarém. Today's might be Saint of the Day. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Sister Angela de Fátima Coelho, the vice postulator for the canonization cause of Sister Lucia of Fátima. We'll be finding out what's next in that cause, and will Sister Lucia soon be made a saint? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. This past week, we celebrated one of the big anniversaries in our Catholic Church that relates to the Virgin Mary, and one of the very few cases of a Marian apparition that makes it into the general Roman calendar. Perhaps we have Our Lady of Guadalupe, Our Lady of Lourdes, and Our Lady of Fátima, which is celebrated, of course, every year on May 13th. And it's the gold standard of all Marian apparitions, as I always like to refer to it. And we're so excited today because we have one of the world's top experts on Fátima and somebody who's been intimately connected with pushing forward those causes of the shepherd children of Fátima. And I was there on May 13th in 2017, the 100-year anniversary, the centenary of the Fátima apparitions as celebrated by Pope Francis there in Portugal. And as part of those celebrations, they also had the canonization of the two youngest children of Fátima. And that, of course, is Jacinta and Francisco Marto, brother and sisters, who became the youngest saints in the history of the Catholic Church. And a big question has been after those events, of course, their cousin, Sister Lucia of Fátima, is being considered for sainthood as well. And it seems like a slam dunk, of course, to have the third of the set. But she lived many, many years longer than the first two. And so she has many writings and occasions where she spoke, and a whole lifetime of investigation that needs to happen to find out if she also lived a life of heroic virtue, which would make her venerable. And then two miracles would go on to make her blessed and then saint. And I think many people would just love to see the Pope do one of these equivalent or equipollent canonizations where he just sort of, blesses the whole thing and makes somebody a saint without the full process of finding those difficult to unearth miracles. So people are pretty excited about this potential for Sister Lucia of Fátima to someday be canonized as well, like her cousins were. And we're so excited today to be joined by, a true expert on these apparitions of Fátima, and that's Sister Angela de Fátima Coelho. And she was the former vice postulator of Jacinta and Francisco, and now she's the current postulator of Sister Lucia of Fátima. And she's got a brand new book that's out. It's called Inside the Light, Understanding the Message of Fátima. And it's a great one because it goes beyond just sort of the storytelling of what happened there in 1917 in Portugal, but it goes into the theological meaning of the Fátima message and takes a deeper look at the lives and the spirituality of the three visionaries. And that's an amazing thing when we're talking about three children. And she's done extensive research as the postulator for these causes, and she's got her own personal story, which was touched by suffering only to be healed by the embrace of Our Lady of Fátima, as she writes it. And it's an incredible journey of discovery. And when we talk about how relevant the messages are for Fátima in our postmodern world. And she's traveled the world talking to many people, including myself in the past. I'm so grateful for a second chance to speak with her. And her name is Sister Angela de Fátima Coelho. Welcome to the program, Sister Angela.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's an honor for me to be in your program.
Wonderful. And it's so great to talk to you again. We talked many years ago on my radio show, and we talked ahead of the canonization of the two youngest saints in the history of the Catholic Church, that being Saints Jacinta and Francisco Marto. As your vice postulator, it was a great honor to speak with you. And you've got a new book that's out called Inside the Light, Understanding the Message of Fatima. Why did you write this book now?
Well, I wrote the book after many years of people asking me to do it, because I, as an invitation from the sanctuary, I do a seven-hour talk formation on the message of Fatima. And in one of these talks, Brian Canelli, the editor of the 10 books, was there. And in the end, he was insisting with me to do the book. I was sort of, you know, reluctant, because I'm much more comfortable speaking than writing, especially in English. But my superior at that time, she was with me in the meeting with Brian. And Brian said, how can I convince you to write? And my superior said, well, I just have to tell her and she will obey. So I did it. See, it's an act of obedience upon the request of so many people asking me to put in words what I do in my talks.
Wonderful. Yeah, Brian is an editor of one of my books as well, so we have that in common. He's a great editor to have. Well, I'm so glad you put together this book, Inside the Light, Understanding the Message of Fatima, from 10 books. And one of the fascinating things about this is that you were the vice postulator for Jacinta and Francisco, and now you are the vice postulator for Sister Lucy of Fatima. How did you get this job?
Well, in 2012, when I was in Rome studying this formation, 3 months formation, to become postulator of the cause of Francisco and Jacinta, because at those days I was only vice postulator, I met the postulator for the Carmelite order. So the priest, the Carmelite priest, who is in charge of all the causes connected with the Carmelite order. So he saw me, and the vice postulator for the cause of Lucy in those days, he was also very sick. So he asked me if I could, once that I has already started with the other two, if I could help him with the cause of Lucia. And that's what I'm doing since 2014, which is amazing. Well, I consider to have the three visionaries, the three seers of Our Lady in my life. This is very impressive. And they are helping me a lot in my personal pathway in order to become a saint myself, which is, of course...
That's wonderful. We're talking today with Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, the author of the book Inside the Light, Understanding the Message of Fatima, and also the vice postulator for the canonization cause of Sister Lucia of Fatima. And in your book, in the introduction, you mentioned that on March 28th, 2001, you actually got to meet Sister Lucia of Fatima. Tell us about the circumstances of that and what that meeting was like.
Well, it was one of the greatest graces of my life. In those days, I used to help Father Condor, which was the vice postulator for the cause of Francisco and Jacinta, giving him, I mean, I was just helping him with the medical letters, reporting miracles. So one day, he just told me, Sister Angela, today I invite you to go to Coimbra because we are going to sing happy birthday to Sister Lucia. Mm. It was her anniversary. So I was so excited. And I remember that, you know, he told me by joke, you know, Sister, she can read souls. Mm. So he just in case I went to confession, it was so funny. Of course, then when I saw her, she was not with the attitude that she could read souls. All the contrary, she was so beautiful, so tiny, and irradiating so much light. So I was kind of, you know, emotional. In my heart, I was understanding, I was seeing the woman that saw the Blessed Mother and our Lord. And my community, Alianza de Santa Maria, our charisma is based on what she testified. So I could see that my life, being a member of this religious community, so connected with these women, so I was a kind of nervous. But I told her, Sister Lucia, I belong to a religious community, which mission is to spread the message of Fatima, so to keep the vocation of the shepherd children. And she holds my hand, and immediately she answers, well, then you have to come here to the Carmelite convent, because that's where I am. So I could see she was so normal and so full of life at the same time, but at the same time with a great sense of humor. it was really impressive for me to meet her.
That's amazing. We're talking today with Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, the vice postulator of the cause of canonization for Sister Lucia Fatima. You know, I was there on May 13th, 2017, the 100-year centenary for Fatima and the canonization of the two young shepherd children. I actually saw you in the crowd when I was there with a million other people and celebrating that day. It was such a great event to be there for. Yeah. And We have two very different styles of canonizations here, or the causes, because these are the Jacinta and Francisco were the two youngest shepherd children. You had very little to go on in order to push them ahead to be recognized from blessed to saint. And of course, the miracles were recognized by Rome and Pope Francis in good time right before that canonization. But with Sister Lucia, you have an entire lifetime of writing and speaking and living, and much more to sift through and go through, and a much more difficult cause. Talk about the difference between the efforts in those two causes.
Well, like you said, Lucia, we are talking about a 97-year-old woman with many writings, because people, since 1970, the provincial told her to keep all the letters she was receiving. So before that, we have no idea how many letters she received, but from 1970, we know that she received around or more than 70,000 letters. And she wrote an answer to most of them. So we had to recollect a sample of letters that she wrote, her diary. We are talking about 2,000 pages. Anyway, we end up with a diocesan process of 16,000 pages with witnesses and so on. So now we are in the process of writing what in the Congregation of the Saints they call the positio, which is a volume where we have to make in a summarized way to enlighten the most important virtues of Sister Lucia's life. It's like a summary of those 16,000 turned to 1,000 pages so the theologians can read. So in this moment, I'm almost finishing this positio book to present to the Congregation of the Saints. When the theologians consider that it's okay, I mean that she practiced virtues in an heroic grade, then the Holy Father will proclaim her venerable. Then we will need another miracle for the beatification and one miracle for the canonization. So right now, she's only servant of God. And I truly appreciate all of you that are listening to us today that pray for her canonization, because we need prayers for this. This is more about the grace of God than our work. So I really need you to join me to pray for the canonization of Lucia.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, the vice postulator for Sister Lucia of Fatima, who's currently a servant of God, and she needs to move along those steps to venerable, blessed, and then saint. And one question I've been dying to ask you for some years now, the miracle that was used for the canonization of the two youngest shepherd children, was Sister Lucia invoked in those prayers as well? And if so, can that miracle be used in order to push her from venerable to blessed almost immediately once venerable is established?
Well, thank you for that question. It's really an interesting question. Well, the miracle that was with the little boy Lucas, now everybody knows anyway, but it was just through the intercession of Francisco and Jacinta. If Sister Lucia was involved, then it was going to be a problem canonically, because a miracle to be recognized, to attribute the miracle to the intercession of a saint, has to be people praying to that saint and that saint only. So right now, I really encourage people, when they want to pray for a miracle, not to ask the three shepherd children, but only the servant of God, Lucia. Otherwise, it will not help her cause. I don't know if I was clear, if I made myself
no,
clear.
No, I think that's interesting aspect, because in every canonization cause, if you pray to your favorite saints, Saint Therese, Padre Pio, John Paul II, Mother Teresa, and a future saint, for example, the Vatican would say, we're going to go with one of these other saints, not this new one that you're proposing. So it is an absolute challenge for you, I'm sure, to have people limit their prayers to Sister Lucia. Well, we're so grateful to you, Sister Angela Fatima de Coelho, for joining us today, talking about this book, Inside the Light from Tan Books. And what is your hope for people who pick up this book, and how does it, how is it distinct from the many other books on Fatima that's out there?
Well, I think it's a summary of the most important theological aspects of the message of Fatima. I think it's written in a very simple way, or people can easily read it, even though it's theologically based and rooted on theology. So, but what I think, what at least what I, my intention is that people growing more and more in the, to being close to the Blessed Mother, they learn with her and from her how to love more and more our God, and especially Jesus in the Eucharist. So
beautiful.
I think this book shows a little bit, or at least it was my intention, how can we follow this path of sanctity? And it cannot be difficult, otherwise Francisco and Jacinta were not canonized. So they are a source of inspiration for us and encouragement for us to not giving up fighting for our own sanctity with the grace of our Lord.
And those are beautiful reflections. We're so grateful to you, Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, author of the new book, Inside the Light, Understanding the Message of Fatima, from Tan Books. You can find that anywhere Catholic books are sold. Thank you so much, Sister Angela, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
God bless. That was Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho talking to us about the canonization cause of Sister Lucia of Fatima and her new book, Inside the Light, Understanding the Message of Fatima. And that's all the time we have for today's program. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, look for the audio archives of Miracle Hunter, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank today's guest, Adam Bly, the Paratus of Religious Demonology from the Diocese of Pittsburgh, and the writer of the introduction to the book, World of Marian Apparitions. And also Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, the vice postulator for the canonization cause of Sister Lucia of Fatima. Check out the Explore episode today at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. The most visited Marian shrine in the world is Our Lady of Guadalupe. I head there to take a look how the mysterious image emblazoned on St. Juan Diego's tilma has inspired millions of believers. Or next week on May 21st at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the Holy House of Loreto is the subject of Explore with the Miracle Hunter. This is the place where the Virgin Mary is believed to have lived and received the Annunciation. But how did it get there from Nazareth to its current home in Italy? Check out Explore with the Miracle Hunter next week at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday. And if you're looking for a new book, check out my book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Church Investigates the Supernatural, available from Tan Books, and you can go to ewtnrc.com for that one. And join me on pilgrimage. Go to my website, pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter, if you want to join me on my next adventure. I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.